Good evening and welcome to Results Matter Radio. I am Erin Mazaros, Chief Marketing Officer and Director of Client Service for the law firm of Burr & Foreman, and I'll be your host for today's segment along with my co-host Lee Cantor. Lee is the CEO of Atlanta Business Radio X. If you are new to Results Matter Radio, welcome to the show. Our show is developed to bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Before we jump into today's session, which is part three of a four-part series on closely held businesses, let me welcome my co-host, Lee. Hello, Lee.
Hello, Erin. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good. You know, I like these four-part series.
That's you do?
A great idea.
Yeah, you know.
And the first two were fantastic.
Excellent. So we're excited because I think you're going to like the last one as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we're pleased today, Lee, to have John Comer and Jack Stevenson join us for our lively discussion on, you notice I said lively?
Lively.
Lively discussion on the critical factors you need to consider when you have been asked to run the family business. What a loaded topic.
Yeah, can you imagine your family
doing this? No,
that conversation.
No, and hopefully my family's not listening. but I will tell you, John Comer is joining us today from the panhandle of the sunny state of Florida. Is it sunny down there, John?
It actually is really nice here today.
So oh, don't tell
surprise,
us that.
Surprise,
don't
surprise.
Tell us that. John is actually the president and CEO of the Southern Restaurant Group, which is headquartered in Destin, Florida. The Southern Restaurant Group owns 8 waterfront seafood restaurants along the Gulf Coast, including the Back Porch, the Louisiana...
Ooh. Lagniappe.
Lagniappe, thank
yeah,
you.
It needed help on that
Pompano
one.
Pompano Joe's, Reggae J's, Cafe Grazzi. Is that right? Did
right.
I say that right?
That's right.
And the Fisherman's Wharf. The company has been in business since 1979 and currently employs about 600 people. Jack Stevenson is also joining us again today. We've had Jack on a couple of our other segments, and we're very excited he could come back. Jack is a partner in the Birmingham office of Burr & Foreman and is the chair of the firm's business section. A substantial part of Jack's practice involves corporate and tax planning for transactions involving business, insurance, real estate, and healthcare entities. So welcome, gentlemen.
Good to be here.
Glad to be here.
Good. Well, Lee, I imagine that our listeners are far more interested in hearing what John and Jack have to say than...
Than us.
Yeah.
Yes, sadly.
Yeah. I think we shouldn't quit our day jobs.
Yes.
So, John, let's start by, I just would like you to share your story. How did you get where you are today?
Well, it's interesting. It's been quite a journey.
Quite a ride, huh?
Quite a ride. I grew up in Birmingham, and my grandfather had started the Back Porch, actually, down in Destin. And so we would come down and vacation in the summer, and we'd always, you know, eat there and spend a lot of time at the restaurant. So as soon as I was old enough to, when I was 13, I actually went down to Destin for the summer and spent the summer washing dishes and bussing tables, and kind of became a summer tradition where I would go down and work in the restaurant every summer. He slowly built the business over the years, and he added a handful of other restaurants in Destin. So he was kind of growing a little family business down in Destin. And so each summer I'd come down and work, and just kind of got to know the business, kind of learned the restaurant business, got to know all the employees. At a college, he offered me an opportunity to come down and work in the business full time.
Now, what did you study in college? I'm curious what you studied in college that he might ask you that.
Actually, I studied finance.
Oh, interesting. So, okay.
And he and I always just had a good relationship. We worked well together, and we always got along well. So, but for me, I kind of felt like I wanted to go out on my own. I had the finance degree, and I kind of wanted to go, explore opportunities and get some real world experience. And so, I turned him down, and I didn't come down after college, and I took a job doing investment banking up in Virginia. And so, I did that for about a year and a half, and I guess in the meanwhile, he was down here running the business, and about that time, he realized that he had some management that was working for him running the business that they weren't really doing a good job, and they didn't really have, his best interest at heart. And so he kind of faced a crossroads where he had to decide if, you know, if he wanted to keep running the business and basically rebuild the management team at, you know, 80 years old, or maybe it was time for him to look at selling the business. So he basically approached me and said, you know, if I was interested in coming down and working for the business, now was the time to do it. And if I wasn't interested, it was okay, but he was probably going to look at other, you know, other alternatives, and primarily probably just looking to sell the business. So
he came back for round two with you.
That's right.
You weren't getting off that easy.
So how'd that make you feel?
You know, it was, it made me feel good in one sense, because I was a young guy, and, you know, it's always nice when somebody, you know, seems to have confidence in your abilities, but at the same time, I was nervous, because I was enjoying what I was doing, and I wasn't really quite ready to walk away from it yet. So it was definitely a big decision for me.
And when somebody asked you what you want to do with your life, it wasn't, I want to be running our family's business.
That's right.
Yeah.
The restaurant business, it's a tough business.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, and you know what? It's interesting, too. I probably need to go back, because when I made Jack's introduction, I left just a little piece out of this, which is the reason we asked Jack to join you. Not only was he helping you from a legal standpoint, so to speak, but Jack's your stepdad, right?
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, love those restaurants.
So go ahead, John. So what happened? Grandpa came back, your grandfather came back, and you said, okay, you know what, I'll take a shot.
Yeah, you know, I gave it a lot of thought. I talked to everybody in the family about it, talked to a lot of friends about it. And you know, I had a lot of pride in the business. You know, it was kind of fun growing up, getting to come down to the beach and eat in the restaurants, and I just kind of hated to see him part ways with him, because I didn't feel like he was really ready either. So I gave it a lot of thought, and I decided to give it a shot.
When you were deciding, in your head, can you share maybe the pros and cons of it?
You know, the pros were, it was an opportunity for me to step into an existing business, and you know, I wouldn't have to start at the bottom. I would get to work directly underneath my grandfather, which was an opportunity that, you know, he and I had always worked well together, so I was excited to work with him. You know, the cons were, you know, he was 80 years old, and I knew, you know, he wouldn't be there forever, so I worried when he finally did retire, you know, what were the family's plans for the business. And also just, you know, the fact that the restaurant business is, I guess it's a very specific knowledge, and it's kind of, once you leave, you know, banking, which was pretty broad, you know, you can do a lot of things from banking, but once you actually choose a specific industry, it's kind of hard to go anywhere else. So really, I felt like in a lot of ways I was kind of making not just a commitment to the family business, but a commitment to the restaurant industry. So that was something that it kind of took me a while to get comfortable with.
Yeah, you were having to make a career commitment.
That's right.
Well, once you looked at those pros and cons, so obviously you chose, you felt the pros outweighed the cons.
I did. And, you know, it was a leap of faith. But you know, it was a move. I had to move about 10 hours away from where I was living. But, you know, it was definitely, I took a big chance, because also, as I mentioned before, the company wasn't being run very well. So I knew that once I started, we had a lot of work to do. Had to basically rebuild the management team, and get the restaurants, I guess, just running smooth again, running like they should have been run all along. So I knew that once I started, I would have a lot of big challenges right off the bat.
Okay, so you come into the business then after your grandfather has asked you to come down here and help. What were some of the first few things that you had to do? You obviously didn't step in and just become the person running and the authority and the people returning to you. What were some of the things you had to do?
Well, first we had to really just kind of assess our management team and try to figure out, you know, who had the company's best interest at heart and who didn't. And we realized that we had to make a lot of changes, and that was challenging.
Did you change your entire management team?
We probably turned over 80% of our management team.
Wow.
So, and then also at the same time, I was really just trying to learn the restaurant business, you know, trying to spend more time in the restaurants, kind of learning from the restaurant managers, and just trying to learn from my grandfather, since he was my boss at that point, trying to figure out what he was looking for in me, and just really trying to learn the business. So
would you say that if someone out there is in the same boat that you are, or going down the same career path, one of the things you might advise them is, you know, take the first 6 months, 12 months, however long you say, to really listen, look, and learn?
I would say absolutely, and really just to spend time in the business and just making sure that it's something that you enjoy. You know, I guess I'm fortunate because I found that after doing this for 9 years, I really enjoy the restaurant business. It's an exciting business. There's never a dull moment in a restaurant. I'm fortunate in that sense. And, you know, I think the most important thing is just to kind of get to know the business, get to know your family business, and make sure that it's an industry that you enjoy working in.
But it is a family business, John. And so what were some of the issues about your relationship with the family and
the shareholders?
Yeah, and particularly when your grandfather retired.
Really just kind of trying to figure out what they wanted from the business because, you know, from my mindset, you know, I wanted to try to, you know, my grandfather had taken this company from one restaurant to 8 restaurants. And, you know, I think it was always his vision to kind of keep growing the company, and that was always my vision too. Everything we were doing, we were trying to set things up so that the company could continue to grow. And, you know, as he got older and as he retired and kind of stepped out of the business, you know, to me, one of the big challenges was just trying to figure out what the family wanted, who now owned the business. You know, what was their vision for the company? Did they want to, you know, keep growing the company? Did they want to keep adding restaurants? Did they have the appetite for risk that my grandfather did? Or did they not want to be in the restaurant business? Did they want to look at, you know, maybe selling the company at some point? So really just trying to figure out what, you know, what were their plans for the business, and just hoping that they kind of align with my plans for the business.
And did they?
They did. You know, for me, when I came down, I didn't just want to come and just be the caretaker for the family business. I looked at it as an opportunity to hopefully take a small family business and to continue to grow it and hopefully establish more of a regional presence and to continue to add restaurants over the years. And, you know, they had a lot of confidence in me at an early age, which was, you know, a tremendous compliment. But they were on board with what we were doing, and they were on board kind of staying the course that the company had been on. So that was that was exciting to learn.
How was it different from you dealing with your family as opposed to when you were an investment banker?
It was a big difference. I'd say one of the biggest differences was for example would be my compensation. Where when I worked as an investment banker, I would sit down at the end of the year, and I'd get a structured review like most companies do, and they'd say, you know, these are your strengths, these are your weaknesses, these are some things you need to work on, and then they, analyze my performance and give me a raise for the year. It was very different when you have, you know, your family members being your mom and your aunt and your uncle that you have to sit down with and say, you know, hey guys, can we talk about maybe giving me a raise this year and trying to make the case for why you deserve a raise? It can be kind of an awkward conversation. So that was a big change.
And now I'm sure that's common in most family businesses. You're looking at your mother as your mother, and then also as a stakeholder in the business.
Absolutely.
So how do you deal with that? Is there any tips or that you could share with the listeners?
Well, we really had a crossroads. After a few of these type meetings, I think John realized he had a crossroads. And, John, you might want to share with everyone, you know, kind of what the next step was.
Well, at that point, I had decided that, you know, if this is what I was going to do with my career, if I was going to live down here in Destin and essentially make the Southern Restaurant Group my life, you know, to devote my wife's work to taking this family business and trying to continue to manage it well and grow it, I felt like that there needed to be something in it for me more than just a salary. I wanted to, you know, have some equity in the business so that, you know, essentially I was kind of, my interests were aligned with everybody else in the family's interests. So around the time that my grandfather retired, I approached them and just asked if they would be open to just exploring the possibilities of trying to put a deal together where I could take an equity position in the company.
And what time was that based on when you got, I mean, is that within the first year? Was that within the first couple of years? When did you finally broach them with that?
It was something that had been discussed all along, but it wasn't something that we really got serious about until after I'd been with the company for probably maybe 7 or 8 years.
Oh, wow. So did you just work off of a general contract, employment contract until then, or?
No, his grandfather more or less told him that he was going to try to figure out a way to get John some equity, but, you know, he just had not been able to put together anything at that point when he retired.
So, John, you said you just had a general employment contract until then.
Right. And yeah. I felt like it was always something that would it would happen at some point. I tried not to get too anxious and try to just kind of let it happen, you know, naturally. And every year or so, I'd bring it up and we'd kind of discuss it and see if it was realistic to try to get something done that year. But it, you know, it took a long time to, you know, for everything to kind of fall into place and kind of get to a point where it really made sense to, you know, to try to make it happen.
Well, the other thing I'm curious about is where is this in the timeline? Is has your grandfather retired at this time when you finally started these discussions? Or is he still heavily involved? So he had retired?
He had retired.
Right.
Great. Okay. So now that you're having these discussions about wanting to have equity in the company, talk to us a little bit about that for those out there that, may be in the same situation.
Well, you know, from my standpoint, I guess I just needed it was frustrating for me at times because, you know, I would look and see, you know, the company doing well, and I would see, you know, my work and my ideas, you know, making the company more and more successful. And, you know, I wanted to share in that success. It just seemed right. It only seemed fair that if, you know, I was going to be the one in the family that spent my life down here devoted to these restaurants and trying to, build this company, that, you know, there should be something in it for me more than just a salary. And I think from their standpoint, I think it made sense, too, because, you know, I think that it's always good when if you have a management team that you're, you know, happy with, you feel like they're doing a good job, to try to handcuff them to the business. To make it so that they can't leave if another, if a better opportunity comes along. So,
and one of the things, John, was you had the shareholders after your grandfather retired never had were approaching 60. They had never worked in the restaurant business. After the bad experience with the management down there before John got there, realized how important it was to have somebody in the family hands on watching the business that had an interest in it. So I think they appreciated the value that the equity ownership brought to the table, that they did not want to just have outside management with their investment down there with those restaurants that his grandfather had built up and into a very valuable company. And part of the problem, John, was you had a very valuable company and trying to figure out how to get you some equity ownership, right?
That's right. It was kind of a complicated ownership structure, so just trying to clean it up a little bit and trying to figure out a way that we could, you know, set it up, you know, in a way that made sense. So that was another one of the reasons why it took a long time to get the deal done. It took a while to get the company to a point where a deal could be done.
Yeah, can you share? I'm curious some of the things that you. Well, actually, some of the different scenarios that may have been presented to you based on what you were looking at, what you would want in the contract to get to be an equity shareholder versus what maybe the current shareholders. Did you go through a different two or three renditions of, you know, scenarios? Or did you come to an agreement? Okay.
We did. And, you know, Jack actually, a lot of the ideas were his, just things that he had seen work in other companies. Yeah, because I had a lot of issues that, you know, more than just ownership in the company, I was concerned about control. Because even if I owned part of the company, I still needed, you know, control or at least a part of the company, so that, you know, down the road, if the family felt like maybe it was time to sell the business, and, you know, I wasn't ready to, so that they could maybe sell the business out from under my feet. So control was an issue. You know, my compensation was another issue that, you know, it kind of kept coming up. So trying to structure that in a way that going forward, it just became less of an issue for the whole family.
And one of the other issues was fairness. We had to compensate the family for what we were spending off that John was acquiring. And here he is. He's been an employee. Restaurant business aren't the easiest businesses to finance. So we had issues of how to pay for the business, for John's interest in the business. And then we had issues of demonstrating and proving to the rest of the family that the value that John was acquiring was a fair value. And then how to structure that from a tax standpoint. Whenever you've got an intergenerational transfer. You've got gift tax issues. If you don't hit it just right, if you transfer it at less than its fair value, then John may have income, or the family may be deemed to be giving him a gift. So you were trying to thread the needle there with a lot of different issues that, quite frankly, the government makes it very hard to make an intergenerational transfer right now.
Yeah, and how does that work? So say you come in, and John, I'm just throwing out numbers here because I have no idea what your financials are, but say you come in and your business is worth $10 million and the family business is worth $10 million and you come in and your position, John, and you, after 7 or 8 years of working there, decide, you know, I really want to have a stake in this company, and since I'm helping it grow, does the family then, do they take the $10 million and say the value of what it is then, that's what we're going to hold on to, and then you get a percentage of whatever it grows? Or, you know, was that one of the scenarios they presented?
Well, that's pretty close to it, Aaron. That's what we had to do because it had so much value. One of the things we tried to do is we had so many different stakeholders in the family. We felt like the best thing to do was not to have the business as a repository for everybody to have a job. That basically we wanted somebody to try to grow the business, make it a real business. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to compensate the non-participating shareholders. And fortunately, this business had a lot of assets like real estate that the restaurants could lease. So what we did was we basically spun off the operations and leased it back to John's company and kept 50% of John's company. So trying to compensate all the different interests and have a fair compensation. And that way the operating business could retain the capital and pay the rent, and the rent hopefully would be available to compensate the other shareholders.
So it sounds like it's a lot more complicated than just signing the dotted line, I'm going to work for this company.
I think John came to me about a year and a half before we got it finalized.
Okay.
It involved developing a structure, and then we had to go out and get someone to value the business. And then one of the important things that I think that the shareholders did, or the family members did, was they suggested to John that he get his own lawyer, and that we had a full-scale negotiation, which was very frustrating to call it a gift in the eyes of the government when you're you know, taking the gloves off and having a full scale negotiation.
Right, right. Well, so the whole timeline, John, of your negotiation, you say Jack just said about a year and a half. Is that everything, or did it take longer to negotiate all of that, or was that just the point where you brought Jack in?
I think that was just the point when the family finally got serious and said, you know what, let's see if we can make a deal happen here. You know, from that point till you said that we signed on the dotted line, it was probably a year and a half.
And John, in the interim, you had to talk to your other stakeholders, like your banking relationship. You had those new restaurants in Panama City. You might want to just kind of go over all the different issues you had to face, not only with the family, but also with your suppliers and your landlords.
Yeah, because basically we had to let everybody know what was going on, because it was a new company and, you know, a different tax ID numbers, which, you know, it required us to go and basically approach a lot of our vendors, all of our landlords. I had to talk to some of our employees about it, but just to let them know what was going on, because I didn't want them to hear a rumor out there about, you know, maybe the family selling the business or something that wasn't true, and for them to get concerned about it. So, you know, I think at one point I added it up. I think I have about maybe 15 to 20 discussions with people, just kind of bringing them into the loop as far as what we were working on. So
once again, Jack and Lee, we're hearing communication.
Right.
Right. That seems a recurring theme.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When people understand what's going on, that they can voice, at least if they have a concern, they can at least voice it and you can address it. The worst thing to do is sweep it under the carpet.
Yeah, and it sounds, John, like you're happy with your decision.
I am. It was a lot of work to get it done, and once it got done, it was the way the deal happened and when it happened kind of in a trying time, because we closed it in I think March of 2009, which is right in the middle of the worst part of the recession, and a year or so after the deal, we had the big oil spill down here this summer. So
right.
It hadn't been smooth sailing by
and prior to that, you had Katrina and a few others.
Right.
That's right.
Are you sure you thought about this?
that investment banking starting to look pretty good, right?
Although, wait a minute.
Really, that has their own challenges.
That's right. That's right. Well, John, thank you so much. On our show, it has become a tradition that when we near the end of our discussion, that I often will make a last request of those on our show. So my last request to you and Jack today would be, is if you could give one piece of advice for the listeners, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say for anybody out there in my situation, and you know, if this makes sense, and you know, you're running your family business, and you'd like to maybe own a piece of it, you know, I would say go for it. You know, maybe hire a lawyer and start, you know, approach your shareholders and see if maybe there's not some interest on their side to maybe get a deal done. You know, we mentioned the oil spill and kind of making light of it, but you know, it's interesting to see just over the last couple of years, you know, a lot of bad things have happened down here along the Gulf Coast, you know, with the recession, the oil spill, the hurricanes, and a lot of people have just packed up and left. But, you know, for me, now that I own a piece of this business, you know, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm here to run this business and to, you know, to stick it out no matter what happens. And, you know, from my family standpoint, that's a good thing. You
yeah.
don't have to worry about, you know, John gets frustrated. John's frustrated. John's had enough. John's, you know, maybe going to get back into investment banking. So I think, you know, it's a good thing for me and it's a good thing for them as well. So I would say anybody out there that's maybe in my situation, you know, I would say go for it.
Good advice. Good advice. Jack, what do you have?
Well, I think people take for granted how easy it is to transition the business, and particularly in a family transfer, it takes a lot of time, a lot of planning, and you can't start early enough.
So time.
Right.
Good advice. Well, we are about out of time for today's segment, so I'd like to thank our guests, John Comer and Jack Stevenson, for joining us today, and thank Lee, my co-host. This has been a great discussion. If you have any questions for John or Jack, please visit www.resultsmatterradio.com to find their direct contact information. If you are listening to us through podcast or via resultsmatterradio.com, please remember to visit our site next week to continue part four of our four-part series relating to closely held businesses, which our next segment will cover how to prepare your business for a successful sale. Thank you again to all of our guests and our co-hosts. On behalf of Burr and Foreman, a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast, we'd like to remind you, if results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give us a call. You can visit our website to find the right attorney for you at www.burr.com. Thanks for listening, folks, and have a great day.